Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Disky Discussions. I'm your host, AB Basson. Today we are joined by a very special guest. Kickoff.com journalist Liam Bakker is an admitted attorney that quit a life in law to pursue a dream in soccer journalism. We'll chat about his incredible journey, what influenced his decision to become a sports reporter, and South African soccer in general. Well, Liam, thanks for joining me on Disky Discussions. You studied law at NNMU in Port Elizabeth, and you were admitted as an attorney in 2019. Before we get on to why you decided to move away from law, maybe tell us why you studied LLB in the first place.
Thanks for having me on, AB. I think it's a case of, for a lot of kids coming out of school, there's this expectation that they kind of need to have their lives figured out ahead of them. And for me, it was looking at finding the right profession, finding the right career to head into. You know, everybody talks about doctors, accountants, lawyers, and the legal profession was, I think, the one that suited my skill set the best at the time. That was the direction I went into there. And then did the 4 years at Nelson Mandela University in PE, 2 years of articles of clerkship after that. And then, as you say, in 2019, was admitted as an attorney of the High Court.
Why did you study law in the first place? You say that, you know, growing up, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure on everyone. I think, you know, do you become a doctor? Do you become this? Do you become that? But, you know, myself included, in the end of the day, I went into sports journalism because it was a massive passion of mine. When did you see the light, so to speak? When did you change your mind and want to go into sports journalism? But why did you decide on law in the first place? Was it a passion of yours growing up or not really?
No, I think it was. I've always been a speaker. I've always been a writer. And I think looking at a career, I was driven towards somewhere where I could express myself like that in law. I mean, that's obviously two big parts of law. So always looking at it as a case of where am I going to be able to really succeed and to make a good living. I think with law, there's also the perception that, you know, it's a high earning career. It's a bit of a misconception at times as well. But I think that was also one of the motivations. But I think, as you put it, I saw the light probably in second or third year varsity already, where I knew that this probably wasn't where I was going to be for the next 10 years. It was then just a case of finishing my degree, finishing my articles and getting admitted and then taking it from there.
When did you start writing about football or soccer, as we like to say? Did you write for any newspapers growing up? Did you write for the varsity newspaper? Where did this love for writing about football start?
Oh, I was probably still in school when I started blogging. I think that's where it all began. And then during my days at university, I didn't write for the varsity itself, but I did write for a small company in the US called Fansided. As I started getting towards the end of my studies and at the beginning of my working career, they were paying me $1 for every 1,000 views at the time. So it was very much just a case of trying to find somewhere to write while I did my day job, if you will. But I mean, the passion was always there for football. So writing wherever I could, whenever I got the chance. And then while I was still working as well, I ended up doing absolute voluntary work at PE Stars in the APC Motsepe League, doing their social media work, trying to write on anything I could for their website. So yeah, since I was little, throughout my studying, throughout my working career, it's always been something I've enjoyed doing.
You now work for Kickoff.com and obviously also contribute to Soccer Laduma. How is it exactly what you envisioned? I mean, when you left law going into football journalism, is it exactly what you wanted? And how's the journey been thus far?
Oh, it's been great. I think it's more stressful than people realize. I mean, you're always chasing a story, you're always trying to be the first. You're always pushing numbers. So there's a bit more stress that goes with it than I think people realize. But I can't complain. I get to wake up every morning and do something that I'm truly passionate about now. And coming from a profession where that wasn't necessarily the case, I've really got no complaints with it. It's been now a year and a half, and I think the highs far outweigh the lows, and the opportunity to meet so many players and to get involved with so many clubs is something that you dream of growing up, you know, as a football lover. So I'm really enjoying the journey so far.
For someone that, you know, chased a dream in the manner that you did, what advice do you have for aspiring football journalists? I mean, we get asked all the time, you know, how do you get into the industry? It is a very competitive industry. What advice do you have for anyone that might be listening to this podcast thinking that, you know, they want to be in soccer journalism one day?
That's a difficult one. I mean, you just got to keep writing. I think the important thing is to get your name out there to write as much and as high quality work as you can, because ultimately that's what gets noticed. It's, you know, people learn to associate your name with the standard of work. They want to see what you've done, who you've spoken to, what sort of topics you've covered. So the more you're writing, the more you're exposing yourself to the footballing world, I think the better your opportunities are to break through into the industry.
You make mention of that, you know, putting your name out there. And the other day I saw something with you and Vincent Kompany, where you're asking him a question about Percy Tau. Is that right up there with your highlights thus far in working for kickoff.com and working in the football industry? If that's not number one, what is number one currently?
Oh, that was incredible. The opportunity to speak to Vincent Kompany was something that, you know, again, it's you never expect to happen. So when the chance comes, you've got to jump at it. And it's definitely up there. I think as far as highlights go, I've spoken to a few big names, guys like Rafael van der Vaart, JJ Okocha, Lars Veldwijk, a couple of the Bafana players that played in yesteryear, George Lubesi, guys like that. And those are all highlights. To be able to speak to these guys who have played at the highest level is really something that I don't take for granted. But I think so far the best thing that's happened to me is an opportunity I got last year when I was invited to travel to Germany to attend a Bundesliga media event. And it took me through to Dortmund Stadium, to Hoffenheim Stadium. We were given the chance to watch those games, to meet all the people behind the scenes, all the coaches, the players. It was just an incredible opportunity, and I think it's going to be hard to top that. I'm hoping something will, but it's going to be very hard to top that.
I think one way to top that might be a trip to Anfield in the near future. You are a huge Liverpool fan. Just, you know, tell us a bit more about how that love started and why Liverpool.
Yeah, that would definitely top that. it all started back in 2002 at the World Cup, the Korea-Japan World Cup. I come from a rugby family, but I was fully hooked onto football from then, watching Michael Owen play for England. And I mean, I had all the clippings from those games that he played in, and the next step is then to find out who he plays for at club level, and at the time, he was probably Liverpool's star player. So through him, I then became a Liverpool supporter, and over the last, 17, 18 years, it's been a roller coaster. It's obviously a great time to be a Liverpool supporter now, but it's been quite a journey. You know, the club's been through its ups and downs over the last 10, 15 years, and it's great as a Liverpool supporter for the club finally to be where they belong.
I think coming from Afrikaans family myself, my brother and I are the first generation, you know, football watchers in our family. I don't know how your story goes, but with a surname like Becker, maybe it is something similar. I mean, were you the first in your family to really start watching football, you know, on a weekly basis?
Absolutely. My dad, big Cheetah supporter. my grandparents, my brother, also big rugby supporters. And then, you know, I was the odd one out. For me, it was always leaning towards football. So they've all come around now. My dad, he now watches a Chelsea game from time to time, and my brother went to the extreme and follows Manchester United. But it's still from a rugby family. I think I'm definitely the one who leaned a bit left and went to follow football instead.
So do you just watch football, or do you have any interest in any other sporting codes?
Oh, no, across the board. I enjoy it. If it's on TV, I'm going to watch it. Sport is a big passion of mine. Football is obviously number one, but I enjoy anything that's playing. If it's rugby, if it's cricket, Formula One, you know, across the board, I'm a very big sport lover.
Maybe let's get on to some of the articles you wrote in recent times. You made mention of George Lubesi. What is his you know, mood like in America? I took an unconventional route, you know, playing in not the MLS, but a bit of a lower league in America. Obviously, he was a huge star at Kaizer Chiefs, went to Sundowns, couldn't crack a nod. What is it like chatting to him, and how's he doing?
Yeah, I think the move to the States was a big opportunity for him. I think for a lot of players, the dream is to get that chance to go abroad. And at the stage of his career where he was, things seemed to be stagnating a little bit. So it was a great opportunity, firstly, to go abroad, and secondly, just to get that fresh start. And the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, which is the side he plays for now, they're a relatively young team, but they're an exciting, you know, sort of an exciting up-and-comer. And when I chatted to him, he, you know, the ambition is still there to succeed, because the team struggled last season. They didn't do as well as many expected. But, you know, he's passionate to improve on that. He's passionate to try and build something there in the States. He's now re-signed for the club for the 2021 campaign, which is exciting, because, I mean, we get to see what he can do in that league. We get to see him somewhere outside of the PSL and to see what sort of impact he can make there. I think one challenge he will face now is that the manager, Alan Koch, he's also a South African, was the person who brought him to Colorado. He's now moved to Canada. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of role the new coach has envisaged for him, and what sort of game time he's going to get there. But he's held in very high regard, that side. He's very exciting. You know, he brings something else, that Cassie flair, if you will. Which they don't really know that side. He's a very exciting player. He's very well liked there. So now it's just a case of building on the foundation that was laid last season.
South Africa actually has a, you know, huge history in the States. You know, if you go back to, you know, Kaizer Motaung and, you know, Joe Mosono, and Alan Koch is a guy that almost flew under the radar, I think, for a lot of people. You know, for those who are not to know, you know, who is Alan Koch? And maybe also we can make mention of a guy like Bradley Connell, who's obviously a huge name in South Africa, having had, you know, good stints, not only in South Africa at Bitvest Fitz and Kaizer Chiefs, but had a very successful career in Germany. And I was fortunate enough to speak to him a few months back, but obviously a lot has changed in recent weeks with him. I mean, for those who don't know, how well are Alan Koch and, you know, Bradley Connell doing in America? Like you said, Koch is now in Canada, but obviously he's made quite a name for himself there as well.
Yeah, I think Koch has made a big impact. He left South Africa relatively young. He enjoyed a playing career as well. He played in Canada, he played in Germany. And then afterwards, he then took up coaching. And I assume, just having had that connection in North America, he was always drawn to return there sometime. And over the last 5-10 years, he's coached in the MLS. He coached FC Cincinnati. He was the USLC, which is their second division coach of the year. He then got a job at Colorado, which is his most recent position. And then after that, the suggestion that he left was that he wanted to be closer to his family, and they're based in Canada still. So he's headed over that side to a club called FC Edmonton, who are in the Canadian Premier League, which is also a very young league. And he's now going to be their head coach and the head of their development that side. So it's a very exciting opportunity for him, and a very, very exciting opportunity for his family as well, that he was able to move closer to them and to be able to take on such a project. Yeah, as you mentioned, Bradley Connell is also in the States. He's with the New York Red Bulls, and he got his first proper taste of management this season. I think Chris Armas was sacked by the New York Red Bulls in September, and he took over then on an interim basis, and he did a really, really good job there. He guided the club to the playoffs, which looked well out of the realms of possibility when he took over, given the struggles they had at the start of the season. He brought in really just a sense of excitement. He gave a young player like Caden Clark, I think he was 17 or 18 years old, opportunity, and he scored 3 goals in his first 5 or 6 games for the club. So he's left a big impact there already. Unfortunately, he didn't get to take the club through the playoffs because Gerard Struble was appointed as the new head coach. He comes from the Championship in England, and he's then assumed the reins there. But Bradley staying on as the assistant manager, and I think that's brilliant for the club because of the impact he's had, because the players know him. Just because of the influence and the new perspective he's brought to the club, that it's important he stays on there. And I'm sure it's only a matter of time now before he either gets a head coach role in the MLS or even abroad.
Yeah, certainly a very bright future for Bradley. Going over to China, to Greentown, where Dino Ndlovu has become the club's all-time leading scorer. I think Dino has been a guy that's divided opinion in South African football. I mean, he's been all over. He's played all over. He's scored goals wherever he's gone. Maybe in South Africa, he's not as appreciated as he should be. What is Dino like as a character for those who don't know? And, you know, how big of a deal is this, you know, him being top scorer at his club in China?
Yeah, I think I fully agree with you that he's very underappreciated in South Africa. I think people look at his record when he was at SuperSport. People look at the fact that he didn't break through at Sundowns. But he's played in the Champions League. He's played in the Europa League. He's played halfway across Europe. You know, he's played in Azerbaijan, Cyprus, and now he's moved to Asia. And everywhere he's gone outside of South Africa, he's scored goals. I think the achievement, the fact that in 2-3 years he's already become his club's all-time top goal scorer, it just tells you the type of quality you're dealing with. It's a striker who knows how to find the back of the net. And I mean, that's something South Africa has lacked. And I do think even with the national team, it's something that has been underutilized because he just has that. He offers something that a very few other players we have do. He's enjoying life overseas. I saw on his Instagram account that it looked like he was making his way back to South Africa. Now, I'm not sure if that's just with the off-season or if there's more to that, but it's absolutely just an incredible achievement to break the record and to do it so quickly in China.
He was quoted as saying by New Frame a few years ago, "Where there is money, I will go." Is that the sort of character Dino is? And, you know, maybe, you know, it's fine. Maybe we need more footballers like that, just being upfront about their, you know, their ambitions and not trying to hide behind for the reasoning why they go to certain clubs. I mean, I think that is the case of a lot of players who go and play in China, but that's not the case when it comes to Dino.
Yeah, I think I don't see any problem with it. I think there's a purist side to the game that says, you know, you want to play for the best clubs at the highest level and you want to achieve this and you want to win trophies. But a footballer's career is also very short. You know, they've got 10, 15 years at the highest level if they're lucky. So there's no issue for my side when a guy like Dino or somebody like that gets those opportunities abroad to earn that extra bit of money, and he takes it. And I mean, it's something that has served him well. I mean, if you look at all the clubs he's played for, all the competitions he's played for, yeah, the motivation might well be, you know, the paycheck at the end of the day, but he's still really playing at a high level. He's playing at a higher level than many of our other players are able to boast about. So, yeah, it's always funny to hear when they are so open about it, but it's refreshing, and I really have no issue with that.
Moving over to Belgium and, you know, South Africa's favourite son, Percy Tau. I think a lot of people are surprised that he hasn't made his Premier League, debut, but obviously there's reasons behind that. For those who don't know why he hasn't played for Brighton over Albion, no, it's not because he's not good enough. I think he is good enough. For those who don't know about, you know, the work permit issues we have as South Africans and also being ranked so lowly, how difficult is it for him? And do you think he will ever get his break and being able to play in the Premier League?
It's an incredibly difficult one, and it's an incredibly unfortunate one for Percy because he's definitely good enough to play in the Premier League. I think the feedback that we've gotten from Brighton over since he's joined the club is that they've been keeping an eye on him, and that they all feel the same way, is that he's good enough to play for them. It's just the issue of the work permit, as you mentioned. They've got very strict regulations when it comes to getting players in from certain countries in Africa, certain countries in South America. And all of this has just been complicated even further now by Brexit. South Africa's world ranking, which I think is now 71st in the world, puts us outside of that bracket that qualifies players to play in the Premier League. And the fact that, you know, Anderlecht aren't in the Champions League, that they aren't in the Europa League, this also counts towards it because they've got a whole point criteria where they tally up points. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different factors that come into that. But at the moment, it doesn't look like Percy's going to be able to hit that this season. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon either. So unless there is some sort of regulation change with Brexit coming to effect or having come into effect, it's looking unlikely that we're going to see Percy in the Premier League anytime soon.
You think, you know, if that's the case, do you think it'll be better maybe for Percy to try and push for a move to, let's say, Spain or France, where he can maybe play for a higher level club that plays in the Champions League or Europa League? What do you see for his future if after this season he's still, you know, not able to play in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think if the uncertainty persists, you know, with him not getting a work permit, then it definitely would be a good idea to look for a permanent move elsewhere. He spent the last three seasons out on loan in Belgium, and at some point it needs to reach an end. I think he's definitely good enough to play in La Liga. We haven't had a player in there for a long time. We've got a lot in France at the moment. We've got Lebo Motiba. We've got Zungu has just come from there. He's joined Rangers. Piri is playing in the second division. So we've got the sort of link there, but it's just a case now of finding the right club to move to if he does leave Brighton, which I think is necessary for him if this work permit issue can't be resolved anytime soon.
You make mention of Mbongani Zungu, and you've, you know, covered his move to Rangers. How big of a deal is the move to Rangers? And I think as South Africans, we actually don't understand how big of a club Rangers is. I remember when I was working at Ajax Cape Town at the time, when Rivaldo Kutsia's move to Celtic fell through at the 11th hour. And, you know, just the response to him being rumoured to joining the club was immense. It was insane, actually. How big of a club is Rangers? And, you know, obviously Zungu now working with, you know, a player that you'd be very familiar with, and Steven Gerrard, you know, growing up as a Liverpool supporter.
Oh, it's massive. And as you said, I don't think the South African audience fully appreciates how big and how passionate Scottish supporters are, and how big of a club Rangers is. I mean, this is a club that has won countless league trophies. It's a club that has historically competed for the Champions League. They're not as strong in Europe, but they're still a massive, massive club. And there's been a great sense of excitement within the club supporters about Zungu signing. You know, he's seen as this dynamic box-to-box midfielder. And I think Steven Gerrard's the perfect manager to coach him. If I look at Gerrard's time at Liverpool, he was often used in differing roles. Under Rafa Benitez, he played as a defensive midfielder. He played as a number 10. He played as a right midfielder, in a holding role. So he's covered all of those positions in his playing career. And it's something that's very similar to Zungu, who's also been asked to do that from time to time. So I think as far as learning by example, I think Steven Gerrard is the absolute best manager for Zungu to be playing under. And of course, he's got the opportunity of now playing in a strong league. The Scottish Premiership is a strong league, and they are in the Europa League this season. So it's a really great platform for him to be in. And it's a massive move for him to go from Amiens to join Rangers. And hopefully it'll become a permanent move at the end of the season, because they have, of course, added that option in to make the deal permanent come 2021.
And then obviously we were met by the incredibly sad news of Anele Ntwangtla's sad passing last month. He was quite a big deal in Belgium at KRC Genk, where he made, I think, 297 appearances and voted into their team of the decade and team of the century. How appreciated is he? Obviously, we saw tributes from Thibaut Courtois and Kevin De Bruyne. How appreciated is he in Belgium? And, you know, obviously, a very sad day, not only for South Africans, but for players and former players of KRC Genk.
Yeah, it's a massive loss for the club, and you can see it in the reaction from all those players you mentioned, all the past pros that he played alongside. I mean, they've gone on to become some of the biggest names in football. But the club holds him in such high regard. They've retired the number 16 jersey in honour of him. And the indication is that it's not just for the season. It's going to be a permanent retirement for that jersey, which is a decision that can't have been taken lightly. It was previously worn by a young player called Elias. I forget his surname, but he's given up the number 16 jersey now to wear number 19 so that they could properly honour him. Just the all-round reaction from the fans, from the club, has been or one of mourning, given the tragedy that has befallen Anele. And it's a terrible thing that has happened, and sadly it's something that is happening far too often on South African roads.
Yeah, very true. Very sad news that. Returning home, and Bafana obviously were involved in two qualifiers last month against Sao Tomo and Principe. What do you make of the two games? And, you know, considering we've got Ghana ahead of us in, you know, both AFCON qualifiers and World Cup qualifiers in the next year or two, how concerning was our performance? But, you know, like Zungu said in the end of the day on Twitter, a win is a win.
Yeah, I've been cursed with the fact that I'm an optimist, so I've been let down many times. But I'm positive about our chances of qualifying, but we'll definitely need to up our game against strong opposition. I think two wins from two was the bare minimum. We had to win both those games. But I don't think the performance was nearly as comfortable as it should have been. I think, especially the game against Ghana, that's going to be a very big game. But Sudan's shock victory over them has really thrown the group wide open. So there's absolutely no margin for error anymore. I do think, I'm optimistic about our chances of qualifying, but there definitely needs to be improvement heading into those two matches.
Lastly, if we can maybe just run over some DStv Premiership action, you know, that's coming up. Obviously, Mamelodi Sundowns have made a terrific start to the season. I mean, they don't want to say it, but they look well on course to another title, even if we're only five games in. Timbo Fane has made a, you know, great start, already scored a hat-trick. You know, he's just a terrific player. Do you see anyone stopping Mamelodi Sundowns this season, considering, you know, the poor start made by Kaizer Chiefs, and they were their closest challengers last season?
I don't. In all truth, I don't. I think Sundowns are going to take the title again this season. And I know it is still early days, but just given the start and given the lack of apparent competition, it looks like it's going to be theirs again. I thought at the start of the campaign that it would be very interesting to see how things work with the whole co-management setup that they've got there, and with Mosimane's departure, how the team would react to that. But they're really looking like the strongest outfit again this time around. And I'd be very surprised if Chiefs or Pirates or anybody else is able to beat them to the title this year.
Yeah, it just seems as business as usual. And obviously the guy that left the gaping hole there, so to speak, is Pitso Mosimane, who's gone on to, you know, become form part of a very select group of coaches to win, you know, Champions Leagues with two different clubs. How big of a deal is that, and how great is it for South African football that, you know, he's been able to guide a huge club like Al Ahly to what is their ninth CAF Champions League crown?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. And he's an incredible manager. I think he's one of those figures that success just seems to follow him where he goes. But it's all down to hard work as well. I think he's moved there at a time when Al Ahly were enjoying a really good period with the league having been wrapped up by his predecessor. But he's then just gone and bolted onto that. He's gone and just achieved something incredible with that club in a country that is so far away and so culturally different to our own. And I think that's so important, is that it's opening those doors for our coaches to move abroad, because very few of our coaches, you know, test the waters outside of South Africa. So he really is. He's just blazing a trail for us that way. And the fact that he's winning makes that process even better for us. And I think it's a very good reflection of him, and a very good testament to the quality coaches that we can produce in South Africa.
Most definitely. Obviously, the team that Sundowns are facing this weekend is Maritzburg United, who've appointed Ernst Middendorp for a third time. What is the mood like within the journalism space? Was it a big surprise to see Ernst back in South African football? And, you know, considering he came so close to winning the league last season, he's taking on a completely different challenge, of Maritzburg having lost their opening five games of the season.
Yeah, I think the surprise was the fact that he had just come off a job in, I think it was Ethiopia, for a month or two there, to come back so soon after leaving Chiefs and so soon after trying that new challenge. He does have that past relationship with Maritzburg, so it's not the biggest shock to see him move there, but it's definitely going to be a different challenge to the one he faced at Chiefs. Maybe a little bit less pressure, but still high expectation on him to help the club change their fortunes.
Yeah, well, Liam, thanks for joining us. We appreciate your insight and hearing a bit more about your, you know, incredible journey into journalism after studying law. We hope to hear more from you in the near future, and good luck with everything. And yeah, man, stay safe.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Abby. I appreciate it.
Only a pleasure. Cheers. In next week's episode, we'll be joined by another special guest within the world of South African soccer. If you have any questions or things you'd like us to discuss on Disky Discussions, please hit me up at @AB_Gosson on Twitter or on Instagram. Stay safe, subscribe, aware.